Welcome to the Wolverine Digest Podcast, the best spot for objective and authentic coverage of Michigan athletics. If you want open dialogue, honest opinions, and in-depth coverage of the maize and blue, this is the podcast for you. And now, here's your host, Brandon Brown, joined as always by Chris Breinlich.
I just want to start by saying go blue.
Well, 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 Brandon and Chris learned how to read a clock. How do you feel, Mr. Breiler?
Slightly on time tonight. Feels good.
We, we're getting more mature. We're coming into the summer months here. We got to stay locked in at least.
It's about time. We're damn near 40. If we're not maturing by now, I'm not sure that it's going to happen.
Well, I mean, I would actually, I'm not going to speak for you, but I would personally say, I mean, like, I'm mature to a certain level about certain things, but the ship has sailed in a lot of other areas for me.
Yeah, I would agree.
I mean, you know, and I'm fine with that. I live a happy life. I like my mentality, my approach. I don't think we can do what we do is the way that we do it without being a little immature.
No, no. I mean, just doing this is a little immature.
I mean, dude, one of my favorite buttons. Come on.
I hate that we can't use. I'm already getting echoes. It's crazy.
I'm not going to spend a lot of time on my torso here. Anyway, all right. Well, I'll fade the music out. I'll switch my audio input so Chris doesn't go nuts over there with the built-in echo.
So that brings up a good, like, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. You and I are both pushing 40, right? So we're getting to that middle part of our lives. And I think back, like, when I was young and every time I would, like, see or encounter or just be around somebody that was our age when I was younger, I always viewed people that were like almost in their 40s as like, you're pretty damn old. But now that I'm there, like, I don't, dude, I feel like I still feel like a giant kid. Like, I don't feel like an adult. Like, I'm meeting other people, like Sully's in the soccer league now, and I'm meeting other parents, and like, I'm just assuming that these people are older than me, and then I'm learning their ages and they're younger than me, and I'm like, Jesus Christ. So, like, we're like in the same boat almost. I still feel like a giant kid.
Dude, I'm with you. I mean, I know I don't look young like I think I do in my head. I know that. Like, I know that. But I'll see people, and it just happened this weekend. I was in Ann Arbor, went out to eat. There was our server was, she was a woman with some age, but she was attractive and she had some really cool tattoos. Chris, you probably would have appreciated this. She was getting sleeved out, man. She had a bunch of tattoos on her arm, and she had like a silhouette face of Marilyn Monroe, and it just looked cool. It was on her shoulder. It was kind of big. It was just like eyes, nose, and then the lips were red. Like, it was just a cool looking tattoo. And I said something about it. I was like, that's really cool. I've never seen a face tattoo like that before with like no outline, nothing. It was just the features in the middle. And we talked for a second. I was like, so did you get that like later in life? Or, you know, like, I tried to ask it like, you know, like, you know, basically, were you a youngin when you got a tattoo like that? Or do you need to be a little more experienced to get a Marilyn Monroe?
Be careful, tattoo? Brandon.
I know,
careful.
But it was a very good conversation. And we asked it and she's like, well, I just turned 40. I thought she was like 59. I'm like, dude, when people see me and I'm 38, are they like, he's 47 years old? He's 52 years old. Gotta be.
Dude, that's what I've been wondering. Like, I don't want to be too specific, but like, I just learned the age of some people that are like some acquaintances, and I was certain, that they were at least gotta be way older than me. And it turns out, it's like they're a year and a half younger than me.
Dude, there is a stand-up comedy act right now on Amazon. I'm not sponsored by them or anything, but I'm going to do a plug because this is exactly what we're talking about. The guy's name is Nate Bargatze. He's hilarious. He's about our age, Chris. He's like 42, so a little older. And he tells us one of his bits is, he's like, you know, I'm hanging out after a show and I'm sitting there with this guy. He's 25 and he's like a couple of young guys just hanging out, you know, getting it in. He's like, and then this 45-year-old guy comes up and I'm like, get away from me, old man. What are you doing over here with us? And that's really how I feel. I really do feel that way, except for when I spend like a substantial amount of time with someone like in their early 20s, I really realize that I'm not close to very apparent. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, hell, being around, you know, college athletes, you know, you start to really realize like you're far away from that.
Yeah. I think I've told you the story when I had the Piston site for a little while. I had some Michigan students helping me out with it. And I had a meeting with them, sat in a room with them for over an hour. They didn't say the word dude once. Not once. Yeah. Facts. Trash. Like just shit I don't even think to say.
No
I
cap. Don't even
think, cap. No like cap.
I'm just now figuring out how that all works.
I just realized I said dude a lot. I know you say dude a lot. I mean, that's a staple an old in man my thing? Life. Oh,
is
yeah.
Dude an old man thing?
Yeah, like it that? Is now. It absolutely is now. And yeah,
Sean Bennett's going to be 29. God bless you, Sean Bennett. Yeah.
Well, I'm hanging on to 38 for just a little bit longer here, man. A little longer.
Clinging to 39.
Yeah. So we'll see how it ends up going for me and Chris over the next year and a half. All right. So let's get into the actual content of the evening. And Chris, I'm going to follow your lead on this one because full disclosure, I did not watch the Hunter Dickinson podcast. Where I'll let you explain it. They kind of, yeah, okay, fart noise. They kind of made it seem like it was going to be more than it was, apparently. I mean, that's how you just broke it down to me before I hit, you know, the live button.
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, that, you know, Hunter Dickinson, he's part of a podcast. For those of you out there that don't follow it, it's called the Round Ball Podcast. You know, full disclosure, I've never watched a single episode of it before, but I saw something pop up on social media where he was supposed to announce the other day. So I went over to YouTube and I was watching it. I was watching it live and it was just, I mean, again, painted it like Hunter Dickinson was going to make a decision. I think a lot of people didn't expect him to make a decision during that pod, but that was how they positioned it. Big announcement from Hunter Dickinson. And basically the announcement was that there would be an announcement coming soon. So there, it was just basically a way to get people to watch their shitty podcast. And I couldn't believe how awful it was. There's a guy, I think his name's Marty Mush, maybe. Maybe he's part of the whole Barstool thing. I'm not really sure what the connection there is. But all I know, Brandon, is I watched about 5 minutes of that podcast. And I was like, you know what? You and I, we were talking about this offline. I'm like, I don't think we're killing it by any means, but there are some bad fucking shows out there, some really bad shows. And Roundball Podcast was one. And but dude, just listening to, there I am saying, dude, just listening to Hunter Dickinson sort of, you know, kick the can and those guys talk about how maybe they kind of knew what he was going to do, but they weren't sure that they were going to say it and go on and on. Like the whole theatrics and drama of the Hunter Dickinson transfer. Like, I know you had asked me, like, you know, do I think there's a chance he's coming back? No. And I feel like this is part of how Hunter Dickinson's career has been at Michigan. It's been very flashy. Not to say he wasn't productive on the court, because he was productive on the floor, but I'm ready to see the era come to an end and just send him off into the sunset.
Do you think, and Chris, you probably on our, you know, we talk about sliders a lot. I think in that way a lot. Like, what way you lean in? Do you move your slider a little bit? For you, I think you're probably a little more on the extreme side of this, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but do you think Hunter Dickinson more sizzle than steak while at Michigan? I mean, is that fair? I mean, he has been productive. You're not wrong, obviously, right. But
my issue is, and I kind of felt this way with Dwight Howard when he was playing in the league, that you're that big, you know, you have an opportunity to be done. Like, can you think of a time where Hunter Dickinson put somebody on a poster where he was just flat out a dominant force in the post? Like, he was obviously productive, could score 20 points on any given night, you know, get you 10 plus rebounds. He wasn't a bad player, but I just felt like maybe mentally a little bit on the softer side. More, you know, more that way I would go. Like, physically, he could play the game, he could contribute, but he just didn't have the mental toughness that I would want to have in a center. Like, have that dog where, like, you can flat out take over a game, be dominant. He just didn't really seem to have that X factor to him. And so
all cool when he was doing well and winning, but didn't have enough to have that be like a driving force to get Michigan to win close games or to get Michigan to compete against some of the better teams. I mean,
I didn't get a lot of leadership out of him either.
Right.
That was another part of his where I felt like he was lacking, where Michigan clearly needed a leader. He was a veteran on the team. He was the most productive guy, but he didn't really seem to fill that role. And so that bothered me a little bit too.
Like, you know, get in the huddle, grab guys by the jersey, pull them in. Like, yeah, not so much. It was kind of like to himself or to the ether where he would do his yelling or his,
or do the big dick celebration running down the court. Yeah.
You know, that wasn't, that was more like a, yeah, I tend to agree with you. I'm probably not quite as far down the slider, but like, I mean, it's tough because Michigan's a better basketball team with him on it. I mean, I'm not going to say otherwise, but I'm not,
well,
I don't entirely disagree. I'm kind of ready for whatever's coming next. I think, and I feel like a lot of people are kind of in that boat. I mean, he hasn't made a decision yet, and technically Michigan is still among his choices, but you and I both think he's got both feet out the door at this point, and we'll end up.
Well, and
else.
That's, I mean, we talked a little bit about this before we went live, like whether or not he would come back. At this point, I don't see any realistic scenario where he ends up at Michigan after dragging this out as long as he has, because to me, the question would be, all right, well, what was the point in all of that? You know, in terms of what Michigan could do in the transfer portal or some of the moves that Juwan Howard might make. You know, I don't believe that Juwan is waiting for Hunter to make a decision. I think he already, you know, has a pretty good idea of what's going to happen, at least knowing that it's not going to be Michigan. But yeah, this whole thing to me has just been, I tuned into that show yesterday expecting partially to see some sort of announcement, something of substance coming from Hunter Dickinson. And it was just more fluff and more bullshit. And I was like, you know what? I'm ready. I'm ready to move on.
So he himself kicked your slider a little further over.
Kicked it further, man. Yeah. Kicked it further. Right. And, you know, he,
it's fair.
Again, as a player and what he contributed on the floor, obviously a solid player, was a guy. Anytime you have a guy that can get you 20 and 10 on any given night, that's a guy you want on your team. Mm-hmm. But all the other stuff, the X factor, the leadership, the other shit you would want to see in a guy like that, I felt like he just didn't have it. And so I think, you know, you said Michigan's a better team with him. Maybe not. You know, maybe it's better not to have a guy like that who doesn't have that extra gear, that other it factor. You know, maybe you look for that in a Terrace Reed or somebody else can step up and fill that void.
You do see it sometimes where you take away, quote unquote, the best player or the most ball dominant player or whatever. You know, you see it in the NBA if you've played sports before, and everybody else kind of steps it up a little bit and changes and adds and does a little bit more than maybe they wouldn't do if that guy was on the floor. And yeah, you never know. I mean, I think a lot of people expect a somewhat down year from Michigan basketball next year, but you never know. You never know how the chemistry mixes together, and you add a guy like Caleb Love, and now Terrace Reed is the guy in the middle down low, and you've got a year older for your freshman, and who knows, man. I mean, they didn't make the tournament this year. Looking at the roster on paper, I don't think it's better, but that doesn't mean that the sum can't be better. I mean, you see that all the time. So who knows, man. We'll see what that ends up looking like. But yeah, that's disappointing. There was some smoke that Hunter's decision might be, you know, announced yesterday or the day before, whenever it was, and still nothing. And I don't remember. I actually asked you this, if there was like a specific deadline coming up, and there is. I think it's in June, maybe.
I think there's a deadline. I'm not sure what it is. To be honest, I don't care enough to know what it is.
that's
all I know is too. I thought he was making a decision and he didn't. And I tuned into that shitty podcast and I watched it and I'm like, found myself irritated.
Yeah. I just, you know, if he picks Michigan, obviously that would be surprising at this point, and then we'd have to care a little bit more. But it feels like he's very much out the door, so he's gonna be somewhere else. In which case, we'll put an article up about where he landed, and that'll be it. That'll be the end of us talking about Hunter Dickinson for the most part. So
yeah.
I don't know. We did manage to squeeze Andrel Anthony in just about every show that we do. I don't know if Hunter's on that level,
and it continues 14 minutes in. CJ,
they wear the same number. Anyway, all right.
By the way, what's up, Rich? What's up, Jared? Good to have you in here.
Yeah, some of the OGs stepping up in here in the comments tonight. Rich from Mediascapes, Jared Johnson from the Army National Guard. I mean, CJ's basically, I mean, he did appear on the show once. I mean, he's kind of like a part of what we do. Hilarious trading card of him in the RV. I mean, all that. All right. So thanks, you guys, for tuning in on a Wednesday night here at the beginning of May. How do you feel about the beginning of May, Chris? I mean, we're starting to warm up a little bit, kind of.
Are we? Are we? Yeah, it was snowing yesterday. It was snowing yesterday. Weeks ago, I was floating in my pool. It was snowing yesterday. And I'm excited that, you know, summer is coming and it's not that far away. But I'm a guy that likes a good spring and fall. And I'm not feeling spring vibes here. It feels very like fallish almost, like dark and dreary and rainy and overcast. So, yeah, man, I'm ready for spring to be sprung.
I feel bad now. Yes, there are many other people in here who are also OG.
Well, listen. Yes, a lot of people in here that are OG.
We shouted out two sponsors, and then we shouted out CJ, who's been on the show. I apologize. Sean and Logan and Travis. And, yes, anybody else. I'm not going to read the whole list, but there's a lot of people in here. Look, if you're in here tonight on a Wednesday right now, I know. I feel bad about that. But Sean, oh, fuck me, huh? All right. You guys are welcomed as well, and thanks for being here. Okay, Chris, Michigan football, phenomenal spot.
Yes.
You have to like almost create something. I don't want to even say negative. You can't even get to negative. We're struggling to come up with something like remotely interesting to talk about because they're set at every position. They're going to be favored in every game. They're probably going to be in the discussion for the playoff all year long from start to finish next year. We'll see what happens in Ann Arbor for the game against Ohio State. Big Ten championship, all that.
Happy Valley. That's
we'll see about all of that. You and I are literally struggling to come up with intriguing, thought-provoking content because Michigan is so set for the 2023 season.
Yeah.
Michigan State, not so much. Not so much over there in East Lansing, Chris. They are paying, $15, $10, $12 million per victory at this point. Not good. Some transfers, some big time transfers, dude. I mean, I tweeted out facetiously, like, you know, I was being goofy. I don't expect them to go winless next year, but I said, like, is Michigan State going to win a game? They literally could go 2-10. Like, that's not super unrealistic when you look at their schedule. And they lost Peyton Thorne. They lost Keon Coleman. I know Brantley was Charles Brantley was in the portal. You informed me that he's apparently back out of the portal. I don't know what that was all about.
And Michigan State,
maybe that happens with some of the other guys too. There's been a little smoke about that, but regardless, right now the team is depleted of talent. They're coming off a 5-7 record. Tuck is not coming anywhere. I don't even know what the hell he's doing. And it looks like they're going to be in a little trouble this year. And I love it. I love it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, you know, and all fans do this. It's not just limited to Michigan State fans, but, you know, Peyton Thorne hits the transfer and it's like, well, he sucked. He's probably not going to be the starter anyway. Coleman hits the portal. And even for as good as he was, you saw people come out, be critical of him. Same thing with Brantley. I have thoroughly enjoyed watching the Michigan State fan base struggle to come to terms with what's going on, because Mel Tucker's contract, for anybody out there who's keeping track, is good until 2032. So they've got quite a few miles left on that lucrative contract. And, you know, you base that off of one or two good seasons when it comes to the head-to-head matchup against Michigan. But to me, I don't think that team's going to be very good this upcoming season. And when you come off of a 5-7 record, you miss the bowl year, and that's what you do with a brand new $95 million contract. You know, the fact that people are already questioning Mel Tucker in East Lansing, I just find it hilarious. I'm really enjoying it. And you're right. I don't think they're going to be very competitive next season. And if they put together another, you know, roughly five win season, I really wonder what that's going to mean. What do you do with a guy like Mel Tucker when you've got that big of a hefty contract? You're stuck. You've got to ride it out.
Yeah. 10 years, bro. Ten years, dude.
Based on
one decent season.
Now, careful, because according to the folks over at 97.1, there might be a little bit of racism believing that Mel Tucker wasn't worthy or deserving of a contract like that.
Winning games also pretty damn important. I'll just put that out there. All right. Care if my coach is a literal, you know, different species of organism if he wins games.
If he's Grimace from like the McDonald's toy crew and he's winning natties, I'm good.
Give me Barney out there with a headset, dude. If he wins more than five games, like, you'd be a little happier. No, I mean, like, the contract is immense, both in length and in amount. And at this point, there's already some people thinking like, maybe we jumped the gun a little bit on that, because he wasn't very good at Colorado. And then he comes to Michigan State. hits the absolute jackpot with Kenneth Walker and has a really good season. Beats Michigan, finishes with 11 wins. I mean, that's a phenomenal year. And it's tough, though, because, and we talked about this when it happened, he probably would have got poached by somebody else willing to open up the checkbook a little bit. So if you wanted to keep him even remotely, you were going to have to pay him. LSU yeah. was being mentioned. I'm sure there would have been others. So in order to keep him in East Lansing, which, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I thought that was certainly the right move at that point. I don't know if I would have said 10 years, $95 million at that point, but it is what it is. They did what they needed to do to keep him, and now, yeah, there's a lot of people that are like, oh, man, I don't know, brother. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if that's what we should have been doing. Graham, I believe their quarterback is going to be Noah Kim. I think he had a decent outing. Like decent outing at the spring game, and but I mean that guy doesn't scare you. I mean, I'm much more worried about Peyton Thorne than I am Noah Kim. And then you take away the top receiver in Keon Coleman, and it changes a lot of things. And their offensive line wasn't very good last year. They were not able to establish a running game without Kenneth Walker, and I just don't think they're going to be very good. They start the season against Richmond and Central Michigan. Fire up chips, baby. Central could beat that team. It's happened in our lifetime, like pretty recently in college. Yeah. I think when we were in college, Central beat Michigan State. I wouldn't put money on that, but it's not out of the realm of possibilities. And then they got Washington. I don't think they're winning that game. And then you get into the Big Ten schedule where, you know, it can be a battle every week, and especially if you're not very talented. So,
yeah.
I don't know, man. I mean, yeah, we're just a couple, like a season removed from punk ass kids like photobombing JJ McCarthy with Tuck Cummins shirts and all this. Where are those people now?
Dude, they thought they were going to be so good. Do you remember all of the talking and all the bravado going into the 2022 season? And then just to see what happened, you go 5-7, you miss the bowl game, and then here you are in the offseason. By the way, I just read. Not too long ago, it looks like Peyton Thorne might be headed out to Auburn. So, I don't think he's going to make that move if he's not going to be competing for a starting job out there. There were a lot of Michigan State fans that wanted to trash him on the way out, but that was a guy who was a 2-year starter and, you know, had a pretty big impact on one of Mel Tucker's most successful seasons. So, yeah, I think when you lose a guy like that who's that experienced, even if you think you got a guy behind him who could potentially be a starter, it's never a good thing when you lose a veteran quarterback like that.
Yes, the college transfer portal account. Is that an official ESPN account? I don't think so. But I don't know if I want to trust that source or not. But it says, yes, Auburn, and there's going to be an announcement soon. I guess we'll wait and see on that. But
yeah,
I don't know. I know there was some talk about both him and Keon Coleman checking out the portal, but then just planning to come back to Michigan State. I don't really know why you would do that at this point. I don't know why Brantley did it the way he did it. But at any rate, they weren't good last year. So I just don't know how much better they're going to be this year. And especially if you take away the starting quarterback and their probably only surefire NFL weapon on offense.
Best weapon,
away.
Yeah,
it's not going to be good. Not going to be good. So, you know, that's what happens. Sometimes you can turn things around in a hurry, and you can also fall off a cliff in a hurry. And right now, Mel Tucker's looking for the parachute cord, man, and I don't know if he's going to find it. So we'll see what that ends up looking like. In terms of Michigan, we said it. I feel like every article I put out about Michigan is just like, look how badass these players are. Look at how good this is going to be. Like, it just, like I said, we're struggling to come up with intriguing, like, other side of the coin stuff because they're just loaded everywhere. That also applies to the recruiting trail. The number one class in the country, they've been landing top flight 4-star prospects, it seems like every other day, every week. Might have another one coming this weekend, Chris. I think you put something up about this, and it's what everybody seems to expect because legacy, current teammate, and just the way the class is coming together.
Yeah, Channing Goodwin, 4-star wide receiver. I mean, went to the same high school, Jaden Davis. They're currently teammates in high school. And then Goodwin's father played offensive lineman at the University of Michigan, I think late 90s, early 2000s. And so he announced earlier today he's going to be making his decision on Sunday, I believe at 4 o'clock. And just like I said in the article, Michigan's already got the number one recruiting class in the nation. Looks like they're going to add another big target. They don't have, you know, for as good as the class is right now, they don't have a wide receiver signed to the 2024 class. So Goodwin could also be the first wide receiver. There's just so many things that seem to make sense and fall in Michigan's favor here. I think that Goodwin is absolutely going to be a Wolverine come Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as Jaden Davis picked Michigan, you started to immediately look at Goodwin and Jordan Shipp, the other four-star wide receiver there at Providence. Was it Providence Day?
Providence Day, in Charlotte?
Yeah. So, and then you throw in the other factor that, oh, by the way, his dad played at Michigan, and yeah, it's kind of a no-brainer. It feels like, for Goodwin, and the way these recruiting things go nowadays, there's not a lot of surprises. So once the smoke kind of gets out there, a kid starts to announce that he's got a decision coming up, all the people who cover recruiting for a living start to put in their predictions and the crystal ball stuff. And by the time the commitment's made, like, everybody knows, and they're not wrong very often, because like, it leaks out. Graphic artists know stuff, coaching staffs know stuff, recruiting staffers know stuff, and it gets out, and it is what it is. I mean, it's been getting more and more like that. When I used to cover it, it was starting to really pick up. Kids were kind of like taking control of it a little bit with social media, but it still gets out there. And, it looks like all signs are pointing to him picking Michigan. And so that's going to be another great ad, another nice piece. That's what I really like about this class too, man. It's not just the, you know, highly rated kids. I mean, Jaden Davis, viewed by some as the best quarterback in the country, depending on which service you follow. The running back from Ohio is a stud. He's a wanted man in the state of Ohio from Ohio State. They've since moved on and picked up commitments from a couple other running backs, but there's like, they're not missing anywhere. There's like, okay, quarterback, tight end, a couple of them,
Brady offensive line,
O-line, you got a center, you got a couple interiors, you got a tackle guy, you've got an edge guy, you've got a couple interior D linemen, you've got a versatile safety. I mean, they're filling all these different holes and all these different pieces. There's not a lot of overlap. They're picking up depth at a couple spots, and they're quality. I mean, that's how you get to the number one class. Now, I still expect the Georgias, the Alabamas, the Ohio States of the world to do really well down the stretch. And the biggest fish often wait a little longer. So I don't know if Michigan will finish number one, but it's feeling damn near like a lock. They're going to be top five.
And yeah, you start putting
top five classes together, and you'll be able to compete year in and year out. And we've already seen Michigan doing that. So the 2023, a little bit of a dip, not horrible. I think they finished, what was it, like 18 or 19?
Yeah, something around there. And they got a late.
But that was before Hillman. Yeah, that was before Hillman, who was one of the higher ranked kids in the whole class. That might have bumped him up to top 15. So it wasn't like it fell completely off, but a little bit considering the success they've had. But now right back on track. NIL is coming around a little bit more. You get a leader and a highly touted kid like Jaden Davis in the fold, and I don't know, man. It's pretty exciting. I know, Chris, you're not a recruiting nut like some people are. And I was really into it, covered it for many years. But when you see a number one next to Michigan's recruiting class, ahead of Georgia, ahead of Ohio State, ahead of Bama, I mean, you got to feel pretty good, even if you're not like a big recruiting guy.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, a lot of critics, people that are cynical, will point to the fact that there's a long time between now and signing day, and that's true. And there's a lot that can happen, but you know, going back to, you look at the guys that they're signing and the camaraderie that this class already seems to have, I think they're going to hold tight. I think that the guys that are there, they're going to keep the vast majority of them, at least the ones that are the most important to this class. And I do expect Michigan to finish, I mean, you say top five, I think top three is a very realistic possibility. You know, I think there's another safety or corner. I think they might have another five-star guy that's going to commit in the relatively near future. So I think this class is going to finish pretty solid. And ultimately what it does is it just speaks to where the program is at overall. Like, Michigan's always been good at recruiting, but the types of guys that they're bringing in now, some elite talent, particularly at the quarterback position, you look at the success that they're having on the field, just top to bottom, man. You kind of alluded to it earlier. It's hard to find anything surrounding the football program to be critical about right now. Everything is in a good place. And, you know, all the credit in the world to Jim Harbaugh and what he's built there at Michigan, because this is what everybody wanted to see.
And to Lieutenant Johnson's point, we talked about this before. You get a guy like Ernest Hausman, That's like landing the best linebacker in the country as a recruit. That's
key pieces to your offensive line. Yeah.
That's a 5+ star kind of kid. You already know he's good. There's no, when you get a 5-star kid, you usually are like, it's gonna take something weird for him not to be good. You get
wasn't Hinton a former 5-star?
He was. Yeah.
I mean, that dude's like 7 feet tall, 400 pounds.
Yeah. Tackle. I mean, when you get a 5-star right out of high school, you start to think like it's going to take something weird for that kid not to be a stud. Yeah. When you get a player like Ernest Hausman, like Ladarius Jefferson, like Chris Hinton, Miles Hinton, Drake Nugent, AJ Barner, when you start like these guys, you have to almost view them as like 5-star incoming freshmen because they're new to your roster.
Now they're not going to be Stewart, another guy that's another one going to have a big impact. Yeah.
Not going to be around as long because they've already played, but in terms of how they inject talent into your team, it's like landing one of the best prospects in the country on the recruiting trail. So it's huge. And we've talked about that. Jim Harbaugh seems to have found out a way to supplement his roster as well as or better than any other team in the country when it comes to bringing in transfers that can immediately step in and play and fit with what they're trying to do. You saw it perfectly with Oluwatimi last year.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to have even more impact guys this year. I mean, it looks like it. I mean, you could have literally, I don't know, because they've got some other good guys already on the team. You could have 3 of the incoming transfer linemen start on the O-line.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would bet on that, but it's not weird to think of Ladarius Jefferson at left tackle, Drake Nugent at center, and Miles Hinton at right tackle with Zinter and Keegan at your guard spots. I mean, like, that's – you can win football games with that line.
Yeah.
But then Michigan also has other returners from last year. So, again, like we keep doing, we keep posting all these articles that are just like rainbows and gumdrops, but, I mean, it really kind of feels like that right now. It's hard to look at anything else.
Don't count out Carson Barnhart, Trent A. Jones.
Exactly. No doubt.
Greg Crippen, Raheem Anderson at the center position. It's going to be really interesting. I think out of any
dude, how about the most forgotten guy?
Line. Yeah.
I never say his name. I always forget.
Who is it?
Gio Alhadi started like multiple games last year.
Yeah.
Jeff Percy started 1 at left tackle.
That position group by far is going to be the most interesting to watch how that battle plays out in the fall because there are – you talk about guys in other positions that could be starters, maybe can be starters. There are a number of guys that legitimately could hold a starting position. It's going to be really interesting to see how that comes together, particularly given the fact that that unit has won the Joe Moore Award the last 2 seasons and is probably a favorite to do it again this year.
I did an article on it a while back now. I think I got to like 14 guys. It's almost a 3 deep of starting caliber players along the offensive line. I've never seen that since I've been covering the team, and I didn't pay as much attention back when I was just a fan, but that was the title of the article. I think this is the deepest offensive line group in Michigan history.
Yep.
And like, I don't think that's hyperbole. I think it really is the most loaded room that's ever strapped up the winged helmet, man. They are stacked across the O-line. And because of that, Chris, stacked at the O-line, best running back duo in the country, a veteran J.J. McCarthy running the show now, a defense that seems to get better and better under Jesse Minter, Michigan's power rankings according to ESPN.
Yeah.
It aligns with everything else, the recruiting success, where they finished last year, where they're expected to finish this year, sitting right there at number 2 behind only back-to-back champs, Georgia.
Georgia, yeah. And, I mean, I just, you know, there's quite a few people out there that don't put much stock into preseason polls or what ESPN has to say about this ranking or that ranking. But again, you know, where things sit as of now, having Michigan in that number 2 spot and for the most part, the vast majority of college football fans and analysis legitimately believing that Michigan belongs there just speaks to where the program is at. You just mentioned it, veteran quarterback, best running back duo in the country, an offensive line that goes 14 deep, a defense that's probably going to be a top 5 unit once again in the country this upcoming season. There's just so much to like about this team and the fact that they are, you know, even if it's a preseason ranking, still sitting up at number 2 just behind last year's national champion. It's fun to watch Michigan be in this position.
Is that where you'd put them? Would you still put them behind Georgia? I mean, they lost a lot first round talent, no Stetson Bennett.
I mean, there's people out there that subscribe to the idea that until somebody knocks Georgia off, by default, you put them in the top spot. And I mean, you know, there's a case to be made there. But if you're looking at what the teams are going to look like in 2023 and what they have and what they bring to the table, I think an honest case could be made about why Michigan should be in the top spot, just given all of that, all the depth they have on both sides of the ball. You know, but I can understand why some people think Georgia belongs in that spot until somebody proves otherwise.
Yeah, Cody, that's very true. Georgia did lose a ton the year before and they didn't miss a beat, but losing your starting quarterback is big. I'm not going to pound the table and say that's garbage that Georgia's up there at number one. I mean, I'd probably put them there too. They've recruited incredibly, incredibly well. They're going to replace Stetson Bennett with a kid who was way more talented coming out of high school, but I mean, Stetson did what he did. I mean, he did it, actually. Yeah. Potential's there for their offense to be a little bit more vertical down the field, but I mean, they're still going to be really good. And to Chris's point, they have won two titles in a row. You can't argue too hard about putting them at the top. Yeah. But I think
I was just going to say what I thought was more interesting than Michigan being at number two, because Michigan moved up a spot in the previous ranking prior to spring ball. I think Michigan was number three. They moved up to number two in the latest rankings. Ohio State was number two and has since fallen to number five in the latest power rankings. And I think, I don't know if you watched that spring game. I did watch the spring game. You know, I remember it wasn't all that long ago where you would watch Ohio State go out and compete in the spring game or watch them the first handful of weeks during the season and just think, God damn it. Like, they're elite. They're practically unbeatable. And I don't view this program in that light anymore. And of course the two convincing wins over the last two seasons has helped that. But when you watch this team play during the spring, I wasn't overly impressed with Kyle McCord. I wasn't overly impressed with their offensive line. And I think they've got some question marks defensively as well. Now, make no mistake, Ohio State certainly is loaded with talent. They've got some elite players on that team, but this is not a program anymore that's in a position where they're just so immensely talented that the rest of the Big Ten can't compete. I think that Ohio State, when you look at their schedule, I think they're going to have some trouble this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
unless McCord or somebody else on that roster steps up and becomes, you know, it's hard to replace a guy like CJ Stroud. I know Michigan fans love to give him some shit. He was elite quarterback, number two overall pick. I mean, the dude is, you know, he was a great quarterback. That's not easily replaceable, even at a program like Ohio State. And I think you're going to see some of the effects of that this year.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Kyle McCord. I'm with you. I mean, that was a kid bigger, better, stronger than J.J. McCarthy coming out of high school. At least that's what everybody said. I'm taking J.J. 1,000 times out of 1,000 over him now, and it wouldn't even be a thought. And I bet your ass Ohio State would probably do the same thing. They'd probably trade Kyle McCord for J.J. McCarthy.
Oh, there's no question.
Right, they wouldn't let themselves say it, but they would do it if they could do it.
There's no question.
I think that speaks volumes to what their offense could potentially look like. Now, a late November matchup with Michigan, that he's going to be way different. I mean, there's no doubt. That happens with Ohio State's quarterback every year. But, yeah, right now, I didn't see anything that made me think, like, oh, they're going to be really good. And another trend I'd like to talk about with Ohio State real quick while we're on the subject, who's their best player? Are they going to play next year? Because Jackson Smith and Jigba didn't give a shit about that team when he was there last year. We saw it with one of the Bosa brothers. He's like, I'm good. I'm getting ready to go to the league. I'm good. I don't need to wear this storied uniform anymore. I don't know. That seems to be a thing that happens around there. I don't know who that might be this year. Is it Travion Henderson? Explosive running back? Doesn't want to get beat up? Let me save myself for the league. Wouldn't be surprised, man, because we see it happen in Columbus. I don't know. I think everybody at Michigan's going to strap up and give it a go. And I think they're going to beat that ass again in Michigan and Ann Arbor this year. So
three in a row.
Yeah. Marvin Harrison Jr., dude, prime example. He's being pegged as a top five pick.
Yeah.
You'd pull a hammy or something in fall camp. I'm good. Daddy in his ear.
And he's going to have to deal with Will Johnson on a cold late November day in Ann Arbor.
By the way, did you know that Marvin Harrison was like, about that life when he was back in the day, like, would shoot people. Yes.
Okay. Well, you see, that's why you need guys like that. Listen, I know you want to run a clean program, but you need some dudes like that.
I'm talking original Marvin Harrison, like for the Colts back in the day. Yeah. His dad, had like a Carlton mustache. Dude looked like the nicest dude in the planet. Shot people. Whatever. All right. So I'm not saying, but I'm saying we'll see what ends up happening with Ohio State's top players, and it's. I don't know if it happens two or three times. Is it a trend where your best player literally doesn't play because they don't want to get hurt worse and want to get ready for the NFL? I can name two that have done it.
All I can say is I'm not ready for this ride to be over. The prior to the last two seasons, that near two decades of constantly losing to Ohio State, like I need another win. I need it to be three in a row. I'm not even close to being at a point where it's like, a loss wouldn't be devastating. I think not only does it have to be three in a row, but I think it's likely. It's at home. Michigan's got the better team. I think they got to make it three in a row, and you know we'll see what happens down the road. But I am not ready for the ass whoopings to end. I need it to continue, particularly this season. I need it. I need it, Brandon. It can't end this year in Ann Arbor.
I'm not even remotely attempting to challenge what you're saying. I'm just
Will be interesting because this presumably is going to be the first year since at least we've been working together that I'm thinking you're going to pick Michigan to win that football game.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I'll mail that in right now. I don't want to give them a lot of respect. I don't want to do anything like and speak too kindly because Michigan has whooped that ass the last 2 years. Can they do that for a third year in a row? Like that lopsided or more? I mean,
I think so. That brand of football
was 21, and then 22. And now, I mean, could it be more than 20, 23 or more points this year? I don't know, man. Like, it would be amazing. And this, they're going to be back in Ann Arbor this year. That running attack, if they can stay healthy and be ready to roll all season long. JJ, just third year JJ. Can't believe JJ's a junior already, but he's
going by quick.
He's going to be ready and, you know, just feeling like the man. I mean, he's kind of always been that way, but
might be his last game in the big house.
You never know.
Could be Michigan playing for their 1,000th win, depending on how the season plays out.
Perfect parlay into our next question there, Chris. How good is JJ McCarthy after 2023? Is he a first rounder? I think, was it Pro Football Focus maybe put out a really early thing? And I think he was like 39th or something, 36, just outside of the first round. Maybe that's based on, you know, he does have incredible arm talent. He's athletic. He's going to be on a really good, visible team. All that stuff plays into where you might be drafted, especially when you're doing it this far out. But in your mind, is he a first-round quarterback, and what does that mean for Michigan and his success this year? And is he the kind of dude that's going to be like, all right, I'm top 15 pick right now, but I'm still coming back for year four? I think there's so many intriguing things when it comes to JJ this year.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for a guy to build your franchise around, there's few people in the country that I would pick over JJ McCarthy, not just due to the on-field talent, but I think what he brings as a person, his mentality, all those intangibles that he brings to the table, that's a guy that I would certainly take in the first round. But you know what? I'm biased as hell. I love the kid. I think he's phenomenal. We obviously have gotten to spend some time around him a little bit these last 2 years. We had him on the podcast last year. But was it last year or the year before? It was before he even played a game
in
Michigan. He was talking about the feeling of, you know, what it's going to be like going down that tunnel for the first time. And now here he is entering his junior season with Michigan, you know, seemingly favored to be competing for a national championship. So is he a first-round talent? In my mind, yes, he is. But I think that in order for that to become a reality, he's going to have to ball out this year. He's going to have a really good season. And, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But I'll say this, that Michigan football touchdown passing record of 25 touchdown passes is going bye-bye this year. Gone.
That's got to fall.
Even with a big-time offensive line and Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards in the backfield, I get it. Run the ball, smash-mouth football. I love it. JJ McCarthy is going to break that record this year.
we've talked about this before. Like JJ is such a he's such a high character, good, great dude that it's weird almost. Like it's I mean that in the best way possible. You spend a little bit of time with him, and we've had the chance to do that. You're just like it can't be real. It can't be real, but it's real. And he's like that all the time with everybody he meets. And to CJ's point there in the comments, like that is going to go so far with executives and head coaches and NFL personnel people.
Just sit in a room with that kid and have a conversation with him and tell me that you wouldn't view him as a first round draft
pick. I want this kid to be the face of my team for 20 years. That's the first thing you would think. Now, does the size and the stature and the arm talent and the decision-making and the accuracy, I mean, that's all very important too.
Yep.
And NFL teams aren't going to, you know, sign contracts to those guys unless they're elite in all those areas. And I think he's got the potential to be, but I'm with you. You can't play 14 games and throw 22 touchdowns. Like you gotta be a little bit more productive. You gotta put your team on your back here and there. You gotta have some of those, call them Heisman moments or NFL cut up moments or whatever. And he's got some,
right?
I mean, he's made some throws already that you're like, that's an NFL throw.
And listen, he finished the season with 22 touchdown passes. I mean, if a couple of those interceptions go a different way, if a couple of the deep balls connect, I mean, he was already on track to beat that record last year. So I don't think a lot has to change fundamentally in terms of the way that Michigan plays football. I just think naturally he's going to get better after being a full year as a starter. He's going to get better as the season goes on. I really like what he has in terms of wide receiver options. He doesn't really have a premier guy. He just has a whole host of really good targets where he can look pretty much anywhere on the field and have a solid target to throw to. So I like the weapons he's got. I like the mobility he has, the ability to create out of the pocket. And then when you throw the other stuff in, the mentality, the type of character he has, I just think everything about this kid screams first rounder. But again, he's going to have to go out this year and prove it. And I think part of that is going to be breaking that Michigan touchdown record.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we both said last year it's going down. I know the starting beginning of the year was Cade first and then JJ, and then it was JJ's job.
Well, there's another factor, right? He wasn't even the starter for week one. So
technically was not the starter from day one. So everybody thought he should be. He proved that he should have been. And even still, you know, you played an extra game in the Big Ten title game. You played another one in the bowl game and he still couldn't get that record. I mean, like I would have thought if you had told me before the season started, JJ is going to be the every game starter, except for one, he's going to play in 14 games. Will he break the record? I was like, dude, he's going to shatter it.
Yeah.
And he did it and he didn't. So yeah, I'm with you. I think that he's got to get to that point and then he'll have a decision to make because, you know, he's not going to overtake Caleb Williams. He's not going to overtake Drake May. He's not going to throw for the same kinds of numbers as those guys. And there'll be another couple that'll pop up. And, you know, does that mean there's room for him in the first round as a junior? We'll see. I don't know. I would lean no personally, not because of his ability or not because of what he can do between the ears or how he would handle the, you know, the 30 visits and all that stuff. I don't know. I want to see like what would okay. This will be the last thing on JJ specifically. Then we have a bigger Big Ten quarterback question to answer here, Chris. But what would be an acceptable number touchdown passes for you? Now, mind you, both you and I think we're playing NC Dub on the Xbox. But what do you want to see him throw?
The first number that pops in my head is 27. I think 27 is very attainable, especially when you look at the first part of that schedule. We know that Michigan's a run-heavy offense. I get it. But like I said, I like the targets he has at his disposal. Guys like Roman Wilson, Darius Clement. I mean, you know, you have you've just got a ton of depth at that position. It seems to me like a no-brainer that naturally J.J. McCarthy is going to get better. I can't see him throwing less than 22 touchdown passes. Yes. So, you know, we're not asking for, you know, a ton more. I think another 5 touchdown passes this season is certainly doable when you spread that out over what, you know, will likely be another 14, possibly 15 games. I think that's an achievable goal.
I have 30. I have 30 just sitting in my head. Like, that's kind of the mark. I mean, you know, every position kind of has a mark that makes you, like, great to elite, you know, like, for running backs, it's 1,000 yards rushing. For receivers, maybe not in college, but in the pros, it's like 100 catches. For this, for that, whatever. You know, for pass rushers, it's double-digit sacks. For quarterback touchdowns, 30, man. You got to get 30.
In today's we've seen Haskins throw, what, 50? 50. I think he threw 50. Joe Burrow over 60. Yeah. I mean, so it's not, you know, 27 or 30 is not necessarily asking for the world. I just think, damn, that's an old record, man. That's I think Henny is tied for first with that as well. I think he might have thrown 22. But that record's got to go. JJ is an elite talent, and I can't think of a better person to break that record than JJ McCarthy, and to do it in a year where Michigan, you know, should be in the hunt for the national championship.
Speaking of JJ and the Big Ten, and really, like, I mean, we talked about this with the playoff teams. Michigan, the only playoff team returning a quarterback. Max Duggan gone, Stetson Bennett gone. Why am I forgetting the
CJ Stroud?
CJ Stroud.
He's easy to forget.
Because they backed their way into the playoffs and they shouldn't have been there in the first damn place. Yeah, CJ Stroud also gone. JJ back. When you look at the Big Ten, it's even more lopsided. I mean, like, there's, you know, 14 teams in the Big Ten. And Chris, you said basically all but how many?
Well, okay, so there's 14 teams in the Big Ten. There's two that are returning solidified, bona fide starter from previous season. So from 2022, that's Michigan with JJ McCarthy and Maryland with Tagovailoa. Outside of those two teams, there are questions at the quarterback position. Minnesota, and I'm going to slaughter this guy's name, they bring back Athan Kalikamanis. I'm not sure exactly how to say that name.
So good.
But he had some starting reps last year in place of Tanner Morgan when he went down with an injury. Minnesota, he's got some starting reps. Rutgers is going to be between two guys that had starting reps last year. And then Northwestern, they're going to have two guys coming back that had starting reps last year. Plus, they just brought in a transfer from Cincinnati, who was the starter down there, and Ben Bryant. So outside of Michigan and Maryland, there's at least a new starter for this year for whatever team it might be, or they've still got a quarterback battle going on. And I think when you look at the way the quarterback position has gone at the University of Michigan for a long time, the offseason debate was largely about the quarterback. Who is it going to be? Who is going to, you know, is it Joe Milton or Cade? Is it Cade or JJ? Yada, yada, yada. Michigan now has a solidified starter. He's been in that role for a year. He was phenomenal. He's only expected to get better. So when you look at it that way, I mean, dude, Iowa's got to – now, this isn't a big replacement here, but Iowa is replacing Spencer Petras or Petras, Petri Dish, whatever the hell his name was, with Cade McNamara. So we'll see how that works out. My gut feeling tells me that's going to be an upgrade. Ohio State, got to replace C.J. Stroud. Penn State, got to replace Sean Clifford. Purdue, who's also on Michigan's schedule, got to replace Aiden O'Connell. Michigan State, replacing their two-year starter, Peyton Thorne. Nebraska replacing Casey Thompson, Indiana, Connor Bazelak gone, Illinois, Tommy DeVito, Wisconsin replacing Graham Mertz. There are a lot of questions at the quarterback position around the Big Ten, and Michigan is not one of them.
That is such a luxury. That is such a luxury. Yeah, Drew Aller at Penn State might end up being incredible by the time they get ready.
Sure. But at the end of the day,
you don't know.
It's still a first. He's a first year starter. And so there are some question marks. Yeah.
You're replacing like a 9-year vet in Sean Clifford. I mean, like, that's valuable. Yeah. That's valuable to have a guy like that running your team. You know what you're going to get. You know what kind of things you can do on offense. Yes, Drew Aller might be awesome, but he might also not be awesome. So right now, the coaches at Penn State are like, can we think he should be able to do this, but can he? Or do we need
it's not a known commodity at this point, right? It's question mark. JJ McCarthy, known commodity. Tagovailoa at Maryland, known commodity. You know what you're getting there. When you look around the rest of the Big Ten, I mean, is Cade McNamara even a known commodity at this point? He had a great season in 2021, but then he pretty much missed all of 2022 and lost a starting job. So, you know, question mark there.
Yeah. I mean, that's just an incredible number. I mean, when you look at 14 teams and only two are rock solid in what's going on at quarterback, and if you go down Michigan's schedule, some of the biggest question marks are the teams they're playing against.
Yeah.
You talked about Michigan State. You talked about
Michigan State, Penn State, Ohio State, Purdue, yeah, Ohio Nebraska, State. Minnesota. I mean, you know, there's questions everywhere. Every single team they play on the Big Ten schedule.
That's... I mean, if you needed more encouragement for Michigan's season, there you go. I mean, the quarterback position
kind of feels like the stars might be aligning for 2023. It really, really feels that way.
Yeah, there's no doubt. There's no doubt about it. All right, Chris, we're coming up on an hour. We've got two topics left that we thought we would get to. The college football format, college football playoff format, is this different from what we talked about before, where it's jumping to 12 and we did a breakdown of the teams and all that
stuff? It's not necessarily different, but they did release the official schedules
for the games.
So when the games would be played. I don't know that it's a big deal, but again, I'm wondering how people feel about it. And I saw somebody ask the question earlier in the show. I'm going to pose the question to you. So rather than getting into the details of the dates, because people can go up and on WolverineDigest.com, I put up an article, I think yesterday or the day before, that basically spells out the dates for 2024 and 2025, what the playoff schedule is going to look like. But do you think, looking at what Michigan has this year and then next year with the field, going from 4 to 12, does Michigan have a better shot at winning it this year with only four teams in the mix than you think they'll have in 2024 with a field of 12 teams? Because I'll be honest, when the college football playoff put out what the bracket would have looked like if it was a 12-team playoff last year, Michigan's pathway to the national championship was brutal. I mean, you're talking about having to get through Alabama, USC, possibly facing Ohio State again before you even get to the national championship game. And so, an expanded field, I still think ultimately, like Georgia in an expanded field in 2022 still would have played for a national championship. I have no doubt about that. But do you think, given the fact that this is the last year for the 4-team playoff, that Michigan has to capitalize here because this is probably the best chance they're going to have in a while?
I mean, I don't know if I'd word it like have to, like they got to do it this year or they're not good. I don't think I'd say it like that, but I think anytime it's less games, it's a better chance because any team can stub their toe. Look at Michigan against TCU last year. Yeah. Nobody had Michigan losing that game, and they did. And Michigan may, to your point, Chris, Michigan would have been a 2 seed last year, so they could have played either Clemson or USC in the first round. Then it would have been some combination of Tennessee, Penn State, or TCU in the next round. And then it would have been either Georgia, Ohio State, or Bama to win a title. I mean, awesome, right? Take your pick of one of those three in a national championship game. So, yeah, I think anytime you can play less games to get to your end goal, that's the easier path. I mean, if you really break it down and things go how they look like they should go on paper and what talent, talent usually plays itself out, I'm guessing in most cases you're going to get like the top four teams down to the end again anyway. I mean, like, the quarter or semifinals are going to look a lot like what a 4-team playoff would have looked like. Probably. Maybe not, but probably. And actually, the way that we worked it out last year, Chris, I don't know if you remember this or not, but we had actually instead of 1, 2, 3, 4 seeds, we thought we would get 1, 5, 2, 6. We had Tennessee coming out beating TCU, who was the 3 seed, and we had Bama coming out beating Ohio State, that was the 4 seed. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I know that. I mean, I'm just when we did
those on campus games for the first round of the playoff, I'm extremely excited for that. And you obviously, if you're playing in the first round, that probably means you didn't win your conference championship. So we don't want Michigan to be in that situation, but to be honest, man, the idea of a Friday night game in the Big House, a Friday night, late night, lights on game in the Big House, playoff game at Michigan Stadium, I just feel like that would be an incredible environment, especially if you've got a team from SEC country coming up to Ann Arbor in late December to deal with the elements and deal with the Wolverines in Michigan Stadium. What an incredible scene that would be.
So when you get to the round of eight, those are the predetermined bowl destinations, correct?
Yes, I believe so. Yes.
So it's the 8-9 matchup, the 5-12, 7-10, 6-11, and then those top seeds get that first round bye.
Yep.
So incredible to host a playoff game that late in the season wherever you are. I mean, last year it would have been Utah hosting Kansas State, Alabama hosting Washington, Clemson hosting USC, and Tennessee hosting Penn State.
Phenomenal football.
Then you move to the next round, and the matchups are just as intriguing, if not obviously better, really. But you lose that home field vibe. You would have had TCU and Tennessee, Michigan and Clemson, Ohio State and Bama, Georgia and Utah. That's what we thought. I mean, yeah, it could have played out a different way, but we picked those as our predictions. I don't know. USC easily could have beat Clemson. So who knows? You know, it would have been awesome, and it's going to be awesome.
I saw somebody, and it might have, I can't remember where it was on the Facebook page, but the idea, thinking about, you know, a late December playoff game at Michigan Stadium, suggesting that maybe a game like that should be played at Ford Field because it is just going to be so damn cold at that time in Michigan. What do you think about that? To me, I feel like, listen, unless it's like emergency type conditions where the game would probably be postponed anyway, I don't know how you do that. To me, it's like that's part of the home field advantage. I mean, you're going from 110,000 to what, 60,000 people that Ford Field holds. You're losing the home field advantage. You're going from playing in the elements to playing on synthetic turf. To me, I mean, that's part of what makes this so great is that you are going to see a team potentially like a Florida or an Alabama or a Clemson have to come to Ann Arbor in late December and deal with everything that comes with that. Moving the game to me would just be insane.
Yeah. I mean,
do you think Michigan's going to struggle to get 110,000 people in for a playoff game in late December?
No, it'll be maybe the biggest crowd ever is what it would be. I'd put it like this. Like, all right, if you take J.J. McCarthy and Roman Wilson, you say, you'd rather have it 65 and sunny or 22 and rain?
Who gives a shit what they want?
But nobody wants – no, I'm saying nobody wants to play in it, but those other teams never have. So it's an incredible home field advantage. And you know Harbaugh's old school. He gets the boys out there slogging around every once in a while. I mean, it's not a real field anymore. It's not like they're covered in mud or soaking wet, but like – it's still a home field advantage. Michigan players are used to it, whether they practice in it every day or not. They're going to have a better feel for it than anybody from the SEC, anybody from Southern California, anybody from the Pac-12. If it plays out that way, there's no doubt.
Cody, you could probably take that 300 plus and move it up to maybe 800 plus. I don't think getting into Michigan Stadium for a playoff game. I mean, unless you're, you know, a season ticket holder and you're getting it face value, like that's going to be one of the most expensive tickets in the country. No doubt about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that sounds so awesome.
Dude, I mean, playoff football incredible. In the Big House. There I am saying dude again.
I'm going to say it.
We should just embrace our age. Just embrace it.
I'm trying to think of things. Like my Uncle Jay says awesome a lot, like way more than I do. Like I'll say awesome occasionally.
I say right on, like when I'm agreeing with something, I can't really tell if, you know, to me that's right like, it's old school.
It is old school. I mean, I like to incorporate some of those old, like whenever I think about it and I freely and quickly use the word rad, I feel really good about myself.
Rad?
Like, I love using it. I never think to. Sean, bro is another one. Like, bro. Those college kids when I sat with them, it was like every other word. Facts.
My 5-year-old daughter has been using bra a lot. Yeah, B-R-A, bra.
Yeah, man. I mean,
this is what it is, dude.
It's pretty rad. That's what I'll say. Absolutely. Absolutely, Cody. Yeah, I'll throw an absolutely out there. I'll throw an absolutely. That's not like a generational thing.
What about when you're seeing some shit you don't like? You ever use malarkey? Has that ever come out?
Yeah, for a while there, when I used to teach, I used to purposely because when I taught, I'm not saying swear words, and I'm even like tiptoeing the line on whether or not I want to say dude or like awesome or sweet or so. I would find other things that were like intentionally old school and funnier, like so malarkey or shenanigans or bee's knees, cat's pajamas. I was saying all sorts of wild shit for a while there. And I like all that stuff. I like throwing out anything you can. Oh, my Lanta. That is a clutch go to right there. Penny coming through big time. I love saying my Lanta. I really do like that one. I really do like that one. Of course, CJ's got to make it racial. We got to be white dads. We can't just be dads.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Oh, my Lanta, CJ. that poop out of your mouth.
I don't even know if we should tolerate that kind of malarkey around here, to be quite honest with you.
Just a couple of honkies trying to get it in, dude. That's
Sean,
all
we
is.
Say pop. Everybody in Michigan says pop. You know the deal?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nobody's saying soda. If somebody says soda around here, they're getting the side eye.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A little suspicious.
I had to, like, I still would say pop when I lived in South Carolina, and I used to have to, like, correct myself so that the dullards down there could figure out what I was trying to say. I mean, that's a good word. I like to pull out dullard every now and again if I can. But last but not least, Chris, and then we'll get the hell out of here tonight. The transfer portal. It's massive. Yeah. It's massive in college sports right now, both football, both basketball and football. Probably the other sports too. I mean, granted, I'm not plugged into those like I am the two big ones, but I once had access to the portal. I was able to see it. A college coaching buddy of mine let me log in and look at some stuff. And I know it was all sports. It was like pages and pages and pages of athletes constantly going in there. And we've seen it for Michigan on both sides, football, and we've seen it on both sides, basketball. We talked about it with Michigan State earlier. Some of the most successful quarterbacks in the country over the last handful of years have been transfers. Kyler Murray was a transfer. Baker Mayfield was a transfer. Jalen Hurts was a transfer. Justin Fields was a transfer. Fields, you go down the list. It's been super, super instrumental in how things play out on the football field and in the basketball arenas, and we're waiting on Hunter Dickinson's decision. I think the way you posed it was good, so I want you to ask the question, because I think it's a very debatable topic at this point.
Yeah, well, I was a little surprised to see how decisive it was, because I asked, at least on the Facebook page, put it out. Generally speaking, would you say that the transfer portal has been had more of a positive or negative impact on college athletics? And when I think about Michigan in particular, I'd be like, if I were just looking at Michigan specifically and what they've received versus what they've lost, to me, it's been a positive, no question. Michigan has benefited from the transfer portal. But almost 80%, we had over 1,000 people participate in the poll, and almost 80% of them said it's been a negative for college athletics. And, you know, I wonder how much of that is, you know, when you look at what's going on with a Colorado, for instance. Like, I saw the numbers come out today. So far this year, Colorado's had 56 players transfer out. Ole Miss has had 33. Texas A&M and Oregon, 31 players transfer out. Arizona State, 30. Arkansas, 29. And so, I mean, dude, when you're talking about Colorado, I know that that's kind of, they're kind of standing out on an island. Yeah. You know, nobody's really doing it to that extent. But even like some of these schools where you're getting almost 30 players transferring in 1 year, it has a weird feeling to it. Like, I don't see how you can look at a college program losing 56 players to the transfer portal and think that that's good for the sport, good for college athletics in general. I get what Deion Sanders is trying to do. We'll see whether or not it ends up working. When you have that much turnover, you better figure it out and you better land some guys that can play football. But I don't know, man. When you combine, I think, the transfer portal with NIL and how murky some of the waters are, I guess I can see why people think it really hasn't been an overall positive thing for college athletics.
The only thing I would – and I don't disagree with what you're saying, Chris. And you were.
Let me be clear that I love that the players have the option.
That's what I was going to say.
I'm on the side of the player, so I get that.
That's exactly where I was going to go. So you said, yeah, I can't think of it being that, but it's good for the players. Or they think it is. And that's really – now they end up leaving and they make a bonehead decision and they say, shit, man, I should have stayed. Well, that's on you. That's on you, young man. That's on you, young lady, to figure out. But in general, I like the idea, and I think CJ said something about it in the comments just now. They want to play. And if they don't think they're going to, whether you think they should tough it out or wait their turn or this or that, like – That doesn't happen very often. Can you find examples of guys waiting their turn and having extremely successful senior or fifth-year senior seasons? Yeah, you can. That's not really how it usually goes. Usually it's like I'm wasting my 4 to 5 years of eligibility here. If I don't go somewhere else, I'm never going to get to play. And you know,
this is a wild example. So Ben Bryant, the Cincinnati transfer, who's now with Northwestern, he was with Cincinnati. It was either his first 2 or 3 years, and he played in a backup role. Then he transferred to Eastern Michigan, won the starting job there. And then after one season at Eastern, transferred back to Cincinnati, won the starting job there, played there for a year, and now is transferred to Northwestern, where he's seemingly going to make, you know, a push for the starting position. And so I don't think that I've ever seen a situation like that where you're the, you know, the backup guy for a handful of years. You transfer out after a year, you transfer back in and win the starting job. Like, to me, that's just wild.
Yeah, that's not,
it's a lot of movement. I mean, does that give you good vibes? Like, is that a kid who wasn't getting an opportunity at Cincy, went and took advantage of one at Eastern, got better at Eastern, came back to Cincy, won the job there, and is now trying to, you know, continue to elevate himself by going into the Big Ten? And
I'd be really interested to have an unfiltered, you know, candid talk with Jim Harbaugh about this, because he was always an advocate for getting rid of the sitting out if you transfer rule. Like, transfer, he may have actually said, like, one, you get one transfer, you can play right away, and then after that there might need to be a penalty, or
yeah,
you lose a year of eligibility, or you have to redshirt, or whatever the case may be. I can't help but have some sort of feeling about a kid doing it that way. Cincy, Eastern, Cincy, Northwestern. If he goes for a fifth year, another school, who the hell knows? Uses COVID year.
He's, I got think a this is school. His final year. I think this is his last year.
Yes, I mean, that's just, I don't think that's how it was supposed to be designed. I don't think that's what it was designed for. I don't think that's how it's supposed to be used. But I like the idea of kids being able to go where they want to go and play where they want to play. Yeah. I mean, if, you know, and I see Dwayne talking about switching jobs for a better opportunity. Or if you or I, Chris, were just regular old college students and we, like, you know, I was a graphic design student, but this program kind of blows. I want to go here. And you go there, and then you really excel. And there's a program out there that's like, we got a scholarship available for you if you want. Like, how's that any different? You're really good at something. You go where the best opportunity is, or maybe the technology's not what you're looking for. Maybe the professors aren't what you're looking for. It's like, it's no different. And so it's different from what we're used to. Chris, here's another get off my lawn. We're approaching 40. This ain't the college football I remember, damn it. But does that make it worse? I don't know, man. It's there's definitely some elements that I'm not crazy about, but I don't think how you can look at it as a whole and say it's been a negative. Is it different? I mean, are you never going to see like a 4-year run of a stud basketball player that you can really, like, Tyler Hansbrough always comes to mind. Like, that dude was college basketball, North Carolina through and through in a nutshell. You're never going to see that again.
Yeah.
Like, guys are too good. They go pro. They don't like where they're at. They transfer. They don't want to not get paid. They go to the G League. I mean, there's too many other weird things now. Does that mean it's better or worse? I don't know. I think you could have a million discussions and examples in every single direction when you talk about those different things.
Yeah, I guess going back to the original question, I just feel like, because by and large, Michigan has been, you know, has benefited from the transfer portal, that more fans would see it in a better light. But even still, the vast majority of fans think it's been, you know, a negative overall for college athletics. So I was surprised to see that, but I think I agree with you. And we've talked about this, the portal giveth and the portal taketh. Yeah. And I think when you're benefiting from the portal, it's great. But, you know, if Michigan was to lose a JJ McCarthy caliber, Donovan Edwards, Blake Corum to another Power Five program, and it kind of reeked of tampering and some NIL promises, like, I might have a different feeling on that. But right now it's like, you know, Michigan is in a really good spot, and part of that is due to Jim Harbaugh's ability to utilize the portal and go supplement whatever team needs that they have. So for me, I think it's been a net positive, but I can definitely see why some people are turned off by it.
Net positive, weird. Yeah. Going against everything traditional that made college football incredible for a long time.
Well, that's gone. Yeah. That's never coming back. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. But that doesn't mean worse. It doesn't have to mean worse. It's just, I mean, I've thought about, you know, some different things. Like, I mean, I wasn't old enough to experience it, but what was it like when, you know, what was it like for basketball traditionalists when somebody came in and said, you know what, we're putting in a line where you get 3 points? People were like, what the hell? What are we doing?
Ruining the game.
What are we doing? Like, all those records, all the big men, all, like, no, no. I mean, you see it. You now you've got the clock in baseball. Like, traditionalists are like, what the hell are we doing? We're getting through a baseball game in under 7 hours. That's what we're doing, all right? It's
well,
okay.
in college football, now the clock isn't going to stop on first down. I think. That, right. So that's changed. So let me ask you this. We've talked about, and that's one that I don't agree with. I hate that change, by the way, but whatever, it is what it is. I feel like commercial time could be scaled down quite a bit. Like, when you watch a game on Big Noon Kickoff or some shit like that, and usually we're busy, but my God, like, the amount of TV timeouts, even at the stadium, it's like, it's ridiculous. But let me ask you, since we are getting to be a couple of old heads around here, and there is something that I think was lost about, you know, I don't want to say the purity of the game, but just the way college athletics came off, the vibe it had. If you had a, you know, the control panel in front of you and could keep college athletics where it is now, or could go back to the pre-portal, pre-transfer, pre-NIL, like, what would you do? Do you like the transition? Like you said, different doesn't always mean worse, but it is different in today's college athletics than it was. Where do you stand on that? If you could pick one era or the other?
I think I'd go back. Even after just saying, that's good. Good for the players.
That's cool. The old part. That's the old head in you.
I'd go back. And honestly, I think the biggest reason for me is video games, and I'm not afraid to admit it. I just think back to how it was playing NC Dub for years and years and years and years and years, and I loved it. And I loved, that's a loaded question, because there's just so many things that come with it now. It seems like, maybe it's because there's been so many gigantic major changes made in like a 3-year span.
Yeah.
You know, like NIL, transfer portal, all the different things that we've seen with the recruiting landscape and the scheduling and official visits being moved. And like, there's been a lot. There's been a lot of big, big changes, especially with college football, which is obviously where we focus on, what we focus on the most, that it feels really, really different. And it's never, you're not putting the toothpaste back on the back in the tube on this. It's going to be this way. So
yeah,
conference realignment, new expanded playoff. I mean, how many monstrous things can you change about a glorious, you know, sport that I'd be interested to look back, like the previous 50 years, how many major changes were implemented compared to the last 10 or 20, maybe would be a better, better window.
Conference realignment, college football playoff, NIL, transfer portal. It is a different landscape today. And Cody, I get your point. It doesn't really, you know, when Saturdays, fall Saturdays come around, people aren't really thinking about the transfer portal unless you're a program who has lost your starting quarterback, definitively your top wide receiver target. I mean, you start losing some key pieces of your program to the portal, then you are feeling that on fall Saturdays if you don't find a way to supplement it. And so I get what you're saying overall, by and large, you know, people aren't thinking about the portal on Saturday. That may be true unless you're one of the teams that has benefited in a huge way by bringing in a Justin Fields, or has, you know, suffered a huge loss. Like, Michigan State potentially can suffer with Peyton Thorne and Keon Coleman and losses like that. So, you know, it's different. There's no doubt about it.
We could take the transfer portal and come up with specific examples and 6 or 8 subtopics and do a whole show on just that.
But here's a good, like Cade McNamara and Eric All being able to go to a program like Iowa, where I feel like, you know, Eric All, great athlete, whatever. Colson Loveland, phenomenal athlete. Michigan's just fine. J.J. McCarthy, the superior quarterback when you compare him with McNamara. And so I do like the idea that those guys could move to a different program where they are going to get some run and be able to play. So, you know, there's an example where I think there's a benefit. Olu Oluwatimi, his career skyrocketed by coming to Michigan, being a part of that offensive line, and you look at what the result is, and now he's playing in the league out at Seattle. I just think there are more good examples of why it's a good thing than negative examples. But I think a lot of this is being drummed up by what you're seeing with Deion Sanders out in Colorado and just how egregious it's been, where he's essentially stepped foot on campus and said, I'm flipping the entire roster. I'm kicking you guys out. I'm bringing new guys in. And it feels very, it feels like an NFL type thing. It feels like a pro level type thing. And I think that's where people are taking issue.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
that's the purity of the game, Brandon.
It's a funny way to ask it, because all through I was like, oh, it's a positive. It's a net positive. Are there some bummers? Yeah, there are. I mean, there's some things I don't love about it. I mean, it's amazing that it happened to Ohio State, but Quinn Ewers just absolutely fleeced Ohio State.
Yeah.
Fleeced. Going there, get a deal, peace, going back home. Like, that's not what it's for. That's not what NIL is for. That's not what the portal's for, but it's not against the rules, and he did it, and he's probably going to be the starter for Texas this year, and they're supposed to be pretty good. I mean, like, it is what it is. I don't love that. Like, if the exact same thing had happened to Michigan, Michigan fans would hate that kid with a passion.
Yeah.
And that's not good. That's not good for the game. But
I mean, if that were to happen with Jaden Davis, Michigan fans would hate Jaden Davis. Same scenario, same situation.
No doubt. So, like, that's not awesome. That's not the way I pictured the portal being used or NIL money being drummed up. But to your point, Chris, I think you'd find a lot more positive examples than negative ones.
Let me interject here just because I see it in the comments section. CJ Frazier and Cody Engel talking about the one more year fund. I believe if the number I saw was correct, they raised about $137,000 for the one more year fund, and that was split between four players, if I'm not mistaken. So you can do the math on that. You know, whether or not that had a huge impact, I'm not sure, but you know, it certainly doesn't hurt when college kids can put a chunk of money in their pocket.
There you have it. It's an hour and 20 minutes of solid discussion on a Wednesday night, man. I mean,
my goodness.
We really didn't even get off the rails very much. We had a little 5-minute intro. I mean, we did a little talking about language and some other things.
It wasn't a terrible show.
Good show.
Yeah.
I will take it. And we will plan to be back next Wednesday, and we'll see what else we can talk about. Again, I mean, we could revisit the NIL stuff and the transfer portal stuff again with a little more focus. Hunter Dickinson may have a decision made by that point. Michigan may have another member of its recruiting class. There'll be stuff to talk about. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We'll be back on Wednesday.